So this one here is Blending Lives and Families, and welcome. I wish I had some fun story to tell you about blending families, but I don't. It is not fun. I actually went to a seminar 2 years ago. It was a five-day seminar, and by the end of the time of them teaching me what I needed to do to teach you how to blend families, I decided it's not worth blending the families. How's that? They actually, what they told us years ago, back when I was in graduate school, that it took 5 to 7 years to blend a family. The new research out and what this guy taught us is that it takes around 21 years to blend a family.
Yeah, we're still working on it.
And so you've got a few years to go. A big family. Yeah, and it does. It takes lots and lots of time, and it takes lots and lots of effort. And you have to be patient and understand it's not going to happen overnight. Now, the hard part is that you go into these relationships and you're so in love and you think everything is fine and everything is dandy. And for those of you that have married and moved on down that course, I hope that you've been to my classes before when I tell you that time is your friend. And what I'm going to throw at you that aren't married for just a little bit, because that first little part is for you, the rest of you that have already remarried, I want you to totally ignore what I'm about to say, but also listen to what I'm saying. So when you come, time is your friend, and what usually begins and happens to us, and it happens very, very quickly, and I'm, in fact, can I draw on the board again? I'll try to write a little better than what I normally do. Can you see blue okay? When you fall in love, you follow a process. In fact, whenever you do anything, you follow the same process. And I'd also like you to think about this, too, as you get your families coming together. Everything starts out with positive thoughts. Did you know that? For those of you that have married, I want you to think. For those of you that have you know, that go back to when you and your spouse, those of you that haven't remarried, go back to you and your spouse, and how many positive thoughts did you have about the person you fell in love with? Pardon me, what?
5 to 1.
5 positives to 1 negative. That's good. Because when you have those positive thoughts, guys, it creates desire. Okay? And those desires then create more positive thoughts, and it starts to steamroll, and it gets bigger and bigger and more and more and more. And then all of a sudden we have hope. Okay? And now we've developed hope. A definition of hope is looking forward with anticipation to something we believe we can have. Realize that when you lost your spouse, that you didn't just click off all of those thoughts and all of those desires that you have when you're a human being. And you still have a desire to be with somebody. You still have a desire to talk to somebody. You still have a desire to be intimate and to share those kinds of things with them. And now all of a sudden, this goes very, very fast when it hits this point. Because when you have hope, guess what it recreates? More desires and more thoughts, and it goes very, very quickly, and then all of a sudden we have action. Okay, when that action starts to take place, and now we're hugging and squeezing and kissing on one another, guess what? Because we've had those earthly desires and those yearnings before, when we start to have little actions, we want more action, and when we want more action, now we're what? We're hoping for more action. Okay, but it's not just more hugging and squeezing and kissing. We're wanting the full meal deal because we've had the full meal deal. And because we have that, this goes very, very quickly. Because whenever there's action, we have knowledge. And guess what we want? And so what I'm throwing at you, and before when I've talked to you, I've told you that time is your friend. And in some of the previous classes today, I've talked about how time is your friend, and when you get into the dating situation, you know, you need to be able to take your time and then let the Spirit guide and direct, because when you hit a certain point, it's just automatic. Okay, and then we go forward, and when we're going forward, we never think about our children. Now, I want you to see how complex blending a family is, okay? Let's pretend, is anybody here who's married? Can I have you guys help me for a minute? Would you just kind of help me and be my people that say, okay, we've got this thing going? Okay, you've only been married a month. I promise you we won't scare you too bad. Okay, now, how many children did you have? And I can't see names, so you're going to have to tell me.
Seven.
You had seven children together, or you had seven? Okay, so she's got seven children, okay, and this is her over here. Okay, and she's got seven children. Is that one, two, three, four, five, six, seven? There we go. And how many children do you have?
Three.
Okay, so he's come over here and he's got three. Okay. Okay, now here's the hard part. The hard part is we're not just joining these two people. The hard part is now you have a relationship with how many? And he has a relationship with how many? No, because you missed your own kids. Okay, so what you've got to look is you've got 7, 8, 9, 10, and now we're going to double or triple that in every one of those, because now it just becomes so complicated, because see, this person, you've got a relationship with each one of those and with each one of those, and they've got a relationship. Okay, plus, and did you see how it goes and it gets complicated, complicated, and complicated? And so what happens now is we're trying to bring everybody together, and so what happens is that we have this wish. Okay, you've only been married a month, and what is your wish? Yeah. Everybody's going to be happy because we have this magical thing going and we're so in love, and it's wonderful and it's great to be in love, but our wish is that it's going to bring those kids together. Now, what that wish does is it comes up here and it creates an expectation. Okay, can you guys be honest? We'll let him be honest. Because you were, okay, what is your expectation? Okay, he has an expectation that everybody's going to be happy and everybody's going to get along. Now, do you have any little boys over here? 18 is the youngest? Okay. Oh, that's the wrong place? That's where it's at, and he's 18. Okay, and over here, do you have any little girls? They're all out of the house, so you don't have any little girls. So it will be easier for you, except now I'm going to tell you in the story in just a minute. But we're going to pretend that she has a 12-year-old daughter. Okay? Now, this 18-year-old boy here, he loves dogs. Okay? This 12-year-old girl has an allergy to dogs. And he owned that dog for 8 years, and now we're going to combine this family, and guess what? She can't be around. Oh, and now because of her, guess what I've got to get rid of, because she can't even breathe at night and I can't live there and I can't be around, because why? And if you make that 18-year-old kill his dog or put it to sleep or go take it down to the shelter, now what's going to happen? Okay, he's not going to be happy. And so this little expectation of yours, now what's going to happen? It becomes a frustration. Now what happens? What are you going to do to that son because he's all ticked off? But he's not listening, because that dog came along. I've had that dog 8 years, and now you bring this girl in, and now I have to get rid of my best friend. And I'm going to put some guilt on you too, because that best friend's been the only thing that's helped me through mom's death. There's what? It's only 2 months till we can get him on a mission. But what happens then is we get angry. Anger sets in. Anybody know that? This will happen in your families. The reason I'm teaching you this little thing right here, because this will happen in your families over and over and over and over and over. Because what happens with all of your children, what happens with both of you, is that everybody comes in with wishes, and they turn into expectations. Those expectations usually lead to what? Frustration. And then we get... And then guess what we want our children to be if they're the ones that are anger? We want them to be good. Okay? So the very first thing, so you guys that are married, don't listen to what I'm going to say for the next few minutes. But for those of you that haven't married and that you're going down that road and you're planning on dating and you're planning on marrying, what you want to do is you want to be able to control as much as you can in the future. And so if you have somebody, for example, that does have allergies, and then we've got some kids that are just pet people, and it's not going to work, don't even attempt it, okay? I'm here to tell you, it's sad, but don't even attempt to put those marriages together. If you have a family over here, for example, let's pretend that his family, he's got four kids, and all of them are ADD. We're just pretending for a minute. Now, what are ADD kids like? Okay, I'm one. I know what they are. And they're very forgetful. They're very sloppy. You've seen my writing. If you've seen the little piles that I have over here, that's a little ADD-ish of me. If you saw my desk, you'd see that it's dirty and messy, and I know where all my piles are. I know what's in my piles. My wife, on the other hand, is OCD, and so we're going to pretend that the other family, okay, your family with your seven kids, all of your children are OCD. And now we bring an ADD family in with an OCD family, and now what's going to happen? The first time the little boy goes over there and says, you know, I'm just doing my thing, and I'm supposed to clean up my thing, and then he has one of those, what my wife calls an O-shiny moment. You know, my wife calls ADD O-A-D-O-S, attention deficit. Oh, squirrel, shiny, you know, and they just go from thing to thing to thing to thing. Realize as you're bringing those families together, they will drive each other literally nuts. And if you're going over here and saying, well, I want to fall in love with this guy, or I want to fall in love with this girl, realize that if you have those wishes, it will go right up that list. You will have expectations. You will become frustrated. And eventually, there will be tons and tons of anger. The scary part for any therapist, okay, that's me going through my job, is that we know that unless couples literally work at what they need to do, that 72% of the marriages, second marriages, end in divorce. Scary, huh? Not to scare you two. The reason they end in divorce, though, is not because of each other. Guess what it's because? Kids. They end in divorce because of kids. All right? So what you want... Pardon me? No. As soon as they hit 8 years old, it's really tough. Okay? And you have to work at it. But that's okay. Because it's okay to work. And it's okay to make them happen. And I want you to know that I know lots and lots and lots, hundreds of couples who have blended their families together and they're happy. All right? But you got to realize it's hard work. And you have to be prepared. And we're going to give you the things that you need to do to be able to be prepared. For those of you that are dating and going down the road, I want you to be able to be aware that you're going to create some instances or crises or drama, whatever you want to call it. You're going to create those because we're bringing different personalities together. And because they haven't lived with you all of their lives, it will frustrate you. But you just got to be able to learn to be in control. They're just general. They are just general families. My guess is that probably 75% or 80% of them are divorced families. Okay, and then you got two sets of ex-spouses and eight sets of grandpas and grandmas and that. So that's where it is. Yes?
Maybe getting ahead of the game a little bit, but it seems like there are a lot of ways you can manage early on expectations, right?
Yes.
So you can...
Yes. And that's why we're doing this whole thing. Because what I'm going to tell you is to fix it all is you simply change the what? You change the wish. That's how you fix it. Isn't that weird? You change the wish. Now, you're going to be really weirded out when I tell you how easy it is to change the wish. Okay? And we're jumping the gun, but I'm going to tell you about it because you brought it up, so way to go. Okay, but as you change the wish, what happens is you change it so that what happens is that you're not having the expectation. Now, here's how simple it is. For you two, what is your very favorite mini short-term date? You don't have one, do you? Okay, for example, me and my wife, we go down to the grocery store because at our grocery store in the Ogden Valley, if any of you ever go to the Ogden Valley, you go over to the Valley Market, you can buy an ice cream cone for 50 cents. So guess what our wish is? We go get ice cream. The what? Go dancing. So you kids duke it out. We're going dancing. See ya. There's the wish. We now change the wish. The change the wish is so simple and easy, and people don't understand, is that here's all my expectations, and it all comes because of a what? It all becomes of a wish. Change the wish. And it also now changes the focus, and because the focus all begins with what? Same thing that you learned from our keynote speaker this morning. You change the thought. When you change the thought, it gets better. So there's your marriage tip. Now, going back to what we're talking about, because we're talking about blending families, you also have to teach your children this. So, going back, we're going to go down the list, because I need to read these, because these are important. Take an inventory of potential problems. This goes back to what he's saying, is we're going to try as hard as we can to manage the expectation. Review old habits. What's healthy or unhealthy behavior could cause a problem. Now, you need to know that just because we go into life and we go into love and we go into marriage doesn't mean that old habits are going to change. Okay? What I know is that if you've got a young man in one of the families that's addicted to pornography, because he's coming to live in your house, guess what? There's a big high probability that he'll stay addicted to. Pornography. Now, what's that going to do to some of you if that's the case? You want to look at those habits, okay? If there's kids that have drug problems, you got to look and say, will those habits change or will they not change? And some do, some don't. You just have to look and you got to be honest and open, okay? Does families have family home evening and dinner, family dinner time? And is there teasing and finding or fighting? Is individuals quickly and easily frustrated? One of the hard parts that I have is in fact, one of the other presenters was telling me a joke at lunchtime, and the joke is this, is this guy went into priesthood one day, and as he was into priesthood, the priesthood teacher asked us, we're talking about perfection today, and I have never met anybody that's perfect. Is there anybody here that's perfect? And this guy raised his hand in the back of the room, didn't know who he was, but the instructor says, are you perfect? He says, no, I'm just standing in proxy for my wife's first husband. Okay? Now, what happens then is that before marriage, I would hope that you would sit down and say, what are we going to do with life? And there's certain things. One of the chief frustrations that comes into a remarriage, right, is that this husband or this wife isn't used to having scripture study and prayer. They're not used to getting up and going to church on Sunday, every Sunday. And it seems like it takes me forever to drag them to the temple. You have to talk about those things. Now, of course, people can lie and they can tell you stories and jokes or whatever, but you want to be able to see some of those things and they're there. And then also, if that's not a habit, is that something that's a deal killer? Or is that something that we will work with over the next 30 years as we put our lives together? You want to be able to do that. You want to review old fears. What fears do my children have? Bullies, teachers, dogs. Dogs, as we met before, you know, before, It could be a problem if you've had one of your children that have been hurt by a dog or afraid of dog, and now we're bringing dogs in. You want to look at those things. Review patterns of past conflict. Do your children balk at too much authority? And does the spouse, your new spouse, tend to be a bit of an authoritarian? Or that man that you're dating, that woman that you're dating? You want to look at those things before you get married. Okay? Review previous emotional problems. Children with emotional problems such as severe anxiety, depressive tendencies, don't adjust well without help to a new family situation. If you're going down that road and you're falling in love and you know this is what we want to be married, that's where I'd encourage you with the emotional problems, is to get with those people, those spouses, okay, and say, we probably need to get your child into some therapy, because we can help them through that sort of thing. But you want to do that. Okay, now, stages of blending a family. Number one is to help each member of the new family accept each other. Now, this is a time process. For you that have children at home, and you're going to be bringing children and being at home, it's a different process than children that are older. What you want to be able to do is you want to be able to introduce them, and that's where time is your friend, and you want them to be able to come and to get to know one another, and you try to get them to do things together. It's a process. Now, let me help you understand the process just a little bit. What we're doing with this is you're trying to make connections. Connections, folks, are made by having emotional moments together. Part of what happens to a family when a spouse dies, a mom dies, a dad dies, is they go through an emotional bonding. Do you guys realize that? That when your children are five and above, you literally go through an emotional bonding together. And it bonds them. It brings them close. And most of the time, in the younger kids, it brings families close together. If they're up here and your kids are all away from each other and they're all married and you're empty nesters when your spouse dies, we find that sometimes when the spouse passes away, it breaks them apart. But it's an emotional thing that for those of you that have younger children. And so what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to bond them together through an emotional ties. One of the things that we find is most emotions are also centered around your traditions, okay? And so what you want to do is you want to do three things. You want to bring each family's old traditions into play. And then as a new family, for those of you that have younger kids that are coming together, you want them then to also have new traditions that you are going to create so that you bond those kids together. So, for example, okay, as Christmas rolls around, well, you got to, let's just take it back, because I will let you because you haven't got time to prepare for Mother's Day. We're going to prepare all the way for the 4th of July. You got to look and say, okay, what have we got going on the 4th of July? What kind of old traditions do we have? And then what you want to do is be able to bring together so that both families have old traditions, that we're doing some of both families' traditions. And then what we want to do is try to create some new traditions. So far, so good? Okay, now, what if one family is a camping family and one family is a go-to-the-Ritz-Carlton family? Now what are we going to do? Go to a trailer. You may have to do a trailer unless there is a trailer involved. But it might be that you go and you say, we're going to try to do a trailer. If we don't do a trailer, let's go do a cabin, but have it be a little rougher than the Ritz-Carlton.
Take a trailer to the Ritz-Carlton
for an RV. And you can rent, just so you know. My family, we are big campers, but I'm one that believes that I don't need to buy it, so we rent our trailer. You can rent them for $78 a day. How's that? And it's pretty darn cheap, and they sleep eight. Okay, but what you're doing is you're bringing them in, and then you have new traditions. You can go and say, okay, we're going to go on the 4th of July, and this is what we're going to do, and on the 3rd of July or the 5th of July, this is what we're going to do, so that you get both flavors in. Okay, I had a couple in not too long ago that they actually had, she had 7 children, he had 8 children. Their children were older. They were both empty nesters. Now, for you empty nesters, what I'm going to tell you is don't blend the families. Guess what they don't want to do? They don't want to be blended. How's that grab you? And I'm telling you then is that you don't need to worry about blending them, but you do need to do is you need to be able to do traditions. And what you have to do is you have to toss a coin, or you have to decide whose family gets what traditions on an odd or an even year. All right? Now, what was happening with this family is they'd been married. Their children are all empty nesters, and they had been married for 7 years. So they were older, and they'd come together, and they got married. They'd been married 7 years, and what was happening is they were trying to do everything. And so what would happen is on a Christmas Eve, it's his family. This is what happened this year. It was his family to come to his home, and they have a home that looks like the Ritz-Carlton because it had to be so big because they actually thought they needed to have enough rooms for everybody to be there. And so what would happen is his family was there, but they had to go do all the traditions of her family, which is we got to go down to Temple Square, and we got to go and do this little concert thing, and then we got to go walk the cemetery that has the luminaries, and all of that happens on the night of Christmas Eve, okay? And so they would try to go do that, but yet be with his family, and his family, when he came home from doing all the things that her family was doing on Christmas Eve, and even though it was at 8:30 at night, his family had actually packed up, left him a dirty note, and left. His seven of the 8 kids that he had packed up and said, "You don't care about us. This was our year. We're gone. We'll see you whenever." And they moved off. All of them lived out of town. None of them lived in the town that they lived. Okay? And it was a mess. It was ugly. What I tried to get him to understand then is now you've got to come back and you've got to do every other year. And then you encourage the others to have some of those traditions on different dates. Does that make sense? For those that have those families that are out there, it's really, really hard. And so you get them to do them on different dates. For me and my family, okay, I have not... Oh, yes, go ahead.
Well, it's off topic.
Okay. For me and my family, I don't like to compete, but as my children left the home and got married, we were competing on every holiday with all of our other in-laws. Okay, what me and my wife decided to do is we're taking all of our, we take it offline. In other words, we have our traditions on different days. Mother's Day this year, the only reason that we're doing Mother's Day this year at our home is because my daughter's family, okay, she's off, they're off doing, serving a mission. My other son's family, her mother and father are in China teaching English to the Chinese. And my other son, his mother and father now are coming to our house for Mother's Day. What we do for Easter is we invite everybody, okay? We had 92 people at our Easter party at my house this year. And we had all of these little kids because we had all of my children's in-laws and all of their siblings and all of their children at our place having Easter egg hunts. But that's what we do different. When we go on family vacations, guess what we do? We invite the in-laws. Okay, we went on a cruise 2 years ago, and 2 of the sets of the in-laws came with us. Made my kids mad because that's who they was going to plan on attending their kids on the cruise, but they came with us, and we had a wonderful time. But you got to think outside of the box when you're blending families. All right? Next one. Set up a system of control. Here's where problems begin. This is where rules and discipline are needed. Now, we're going to go back and talk about smaller children. One of the things that I would like you to do is in those of you that are just remarried, if you've got children, but you guys don't have children at home then, right? You guys are empty nesters. You got 3 at home. Okay, has 3 at home, and so you've got a few there, but you got to have rules. When you guys set up your rules, when you have these small children, you set up the rules. And you two sit down first and make the rules. But you're not going to tell your kids you've done that. You're just going to set them up. And then what you're going to do is you're going to have a family meeting. And I recommend that in the first stages of those of you that have got children at home is that you have family meetings weekly If you've got lots of little kids, I would say family meetings twice a week, but at least weekly in the beginning year. For those of you that you go down the road, you may not have to have them, but you're going to sit down, you're going to have a family meeting, and now you as parents are going to guide the children, because you're going to get a little whiteboard or a chalkboard or a big piece of paper, and you're going to say, okay, let's make the rules, guys. And they're going to go and say, this is a rule, and this is a rule, and you guys are going to guide them and direct them and help them set up rules. Okay, Heavenly Father was very, very wise when he only gave 10. If you have more than 10 rules, you've got too many. All right? Only have small rules, but let them be general. Next thing you do is then you've got the rules. The next thing you want to do is you want to set down the punishments for the rules. So you're going to write down the punishments for each of the rules. When you break the rules, here's the things you got to do. All right? And then you're going to type them up. Bloop. You're going to have one of you sitting there, and you're going to type up the rules. You're going to print them off, and at the bottom of the list, you're going to have a place for everybody to sign. You want them to sign it, even if they're 4 and they don't know how to write. Have them sign the paper. Now, the reason that you've done that is now you've got them to buy into it a little bit and realize the rules will change from week to week and month to month, but when you do that, you're doing it as a family as a whole. And now what happens is you go in and now we have to obey the rules. Now the hard part and what happens is this, is the first thing that happens is we've got mothers or fathers at home with the children that aren't theirs. And the kids misobey and disobey the rules. Now, what happens? Who's going to discipline them if their mother or their father isn't home? Because I encourage you in the beginning, first 2-3 years, is the parent who's over, you know, whose child it is, I encourage you to be the disciplinarian. So if it's your child that's misbehaving, you go after you and your husband sit down or you and your wife sit down, you're going and saying, this is what it is. But you're the spokesperson. But if that child is misbehaving and you're not home, who gets to be the disciplinarian? The parent that's home. And all you have to do now is say, go read the rule. Which rule are you disobeying? I don't know. Well, let's go over to the fridge then. I can help you. If they're a teenager, go read the rule. I want you to know which rule it is. You agreed. Now, what's the punishment? And now guess what they do? They can punish themselves. So what happens then is parents come in, and the parent that isn't their parent, they will do the disciplining, but... And when there is no rules on the fridge and there is no written things that are they've agreed to, now that parent becomes the bad guy. And now they're going to come to the mom or the dad that is the parent. They're going to say, they're picking on me. And now who are you going to stand up for? Most of the time, you're going to pick your child over your spouse. And that's why we have 72% of people who marry get in trouble, because now I'm choosing the child over my spouse. So far, so good? Okay, now I'm going to go on a little side trip that I didn't write down here, but I feel I got to go on a side trip. One of the things that I believe that every family needs to have is what I call a hierarchy of their values. Okay, if you've got room to write, write this, please. A hierarchy of your values is not your priorities. A priority is how you spend your time and your money. A hierarchy of your values is what I'm going to say is how you make decisions and choices. Okay? You either make the choices by what's most important to me, or you make a choice and decision of what's right for me right now. My experience in life is whenever I've made a choice that says, this is what's right for me right now, it's not usually a good choice. And years ago, I had a wonderful, wonderful man who became like a father to me, and he taught me the concept that I'm going to teach you. First thing he did is he said to me, he says, I want you to go home and I want you to write down the things that are most important to you, and I want you to put it in a priority. And then he said to me, I want you to go out all week long and on a little 3x5 card, and that was before we had cell phones, okay? That was back when we had pagers. Pagers didn't write anything. But it was one of those things that says, write down how you spend your time every day. What I come to understand and realize is that the things that mattered the most to me, I wasn't spending a whole lot of time doing them. So what I did is I went and I followed his advice, and I believe now that I've studied it out, and I've studied it more than I'm sure he intended me to, but I've studied it a lot, and here's the top five of the hierarchy value. I believe that everybody's top five should be the same. Number one should be your testimony, your Heavenly Father and Savior. Number two, it should be your spouse. When you choose to remarry, it's not your spouse in heaven. It's your spouse here on earth. The biggest problem that I find with widows and widowers, and it's different than divorcees, guys, is that a lot of times what we do is we pluck our spouse and he went to heaven or she went to heaven, and what we do is we grab another one, we plop them in their place, and we think they're going to act and react just like my first husband or wife did. It doesn't work that way. You can't just put somebody in their position. It's a whole new world. You're actually living in a different world now because you brought a new spouse into that world. But they need to be your number two priority. So when a choice and decision is made, guess what? It should be made with them in mind, not the child. That's really, 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 do you want me to go a few more really's hard for individuals to grasp onto, because my child lost their husband or their father or their mother, and they're going through this tough times. So I have to be different to them, and I'm here to tell you, no, you don't. Okay, they have to learn to grow. They have to learn to change. They have to learn to do the right things. And as long as your spouse is not doing something immoral, you need to support them. All right? Number three should be your children. Number four should be your grandchildren. And then number five needs to be your extended family. Now, for me, I'm going to take it a little bit further. For me, after family comes my friends and my neighbors. After my friends and my neighbors comes the church. Now, you'll notice that my testimony and the church is different. If you'd have been in my ward as a bishop, you'd have known that there were weeks when the bishop canceled church because somebody had a problem in their home, and my ward then went to that home. You'd have found the bishop that was driving to church meetings on a Sunday morning. He looked out and he saw his neighbor hauling hay because it was going to rain, because I live in a farming community and I knew it was going to rain. I would go help my neighbor haul hay and call my counselor and say, you meet without me. They would usually come join us, but the hay would be in the barn before church started, because why? What came before church? Friends and neighbors. Okay, you had a bishop who, if his wife was ill, guess where he would be? He would be with his wife. Now, my wife herniated her back last Monday. I want you to know that I had permission to come and be here, because guess what I was going to do? I was going to cancel my participation in this conference because she's laying home, and good thing is I've got a son just a few miles away that's over taking care of her, and she is feeling better, okay? But basically, guess what I needed to do? I needed to take care of her instead of friends. That's what I call you, as my friends.
Why so many people miss that?
Don't know. Okay, and I will thank her. But what?
Nobody would be in church. If we put friends, everybody has needs, we would be in church.
Mm-hmm. I think they would, but I think that we'd be taking care of friends a whole lot sooner than we'd be taken, because if you'll notice on my list, okay, after church comes my patients. That if you were my patients, that's who you would be with me, all right? And after patience, then comes me. I finally make the list at number 9. Okay, it doesn't include boating. It doesn't include my garden. It doesn't include my yard. It doesn't include working on my house. All of those things are so far down my list. But that's how I go about making choices. And as you go about making those choices now based upon the hierarchy, when your children come at you and they say to you, "Dad's being, this, you know, Ron's being so mean to me. You know, he's picking on me. He doesn't treat his kids that way." What you do, instead of listening to your child, guess what you do? You'd go talk to the other parent and say, "This is what he said. Tell me what really happened." And guess who you'd try to believe? Okay, you try to believe your spouse. And then together you guys go and say, "Okay, this is what's happened. What do you think we need to do?" Most of the time, if you have your rules written and you have your little punishments, you just go and say, "You broke the rule, go do the punishment." Yes?
So with the, I think in Christ's family, in his first marriage, it was easy to have your spouse. Number one, they came before your children, mm-hmm. and it was, the hierarchy was already established. I remember when my parents got divorced and my dad got remarried, and we were little, and like he was like, "Okay, she's not the most important person." You know, like the delivery wasn't very, very smooth. And I was young enough, I don't remember that, but my sister like, still has issues with how that delivery was given. What, in your experience, what is maybe more?
Okay, so now I'm trying to recap how to let everybody hear what you said. So what you're asking is, when there's children have been your priority for a number of years after the death of your spouse, and now you introduce a new spouse into the portrait, how do you make it so that they understand that person is more important than they are?
Yeah, and I don't know if "more important" is the right word, because kids don't understand their importance, but that it's clear that, you know, mom and dad are a team.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mom, your dad.
Well, I'm going to give you the easy answer. No, that's a good, that was a really good seminary answer. Okay, this is just a Kent Allen belief, and I have nothing to go on other than just experience. I have not read any research on it, any of that stuff, but what I do know is that when you start living as I'm asking you to do and making decisions like I'm asking you to do, then you just keep living it, and parents spend way, way, way too much time trying to talk and convince a child that their thinking is wrong. Okay, my experience is you just say, "This is how it is," and I'm not trying to be mean that way. You're doing it in a kind way, but what you're doing is you're just saying, "This is how it's got to be." Then what a child is now learning over the course of time that they get to be with you until they're 18 or 21, or if those of you that might have children that are coming back for the third time, but they get to see what it's really supposed to be like. The most important thing that a father can do is show the children that he loves a mother. The most important thing a mother can do is show the children that she loves a father. And that then helps them understand, and it helps them so that as they grow up, they're putting their priorities in order. Yeah, it's more by actions and love. And again, you're listening to them. And there's a really good book that you all ought to read. It's called Raising Emotionally Intelligent Children. I can speak. Raising Emotionally Intelligent Children by John Gottman. And it talks about how to address and help your child, you know, develop emotionally those things that need to happen there. Yes.
Okay. So one challenge we found in the first year and a half of trying to make muesli of our family, we don't even try to blend at this point. That's just how we've decided to approach it, is that so we have one another first, but he went through a divorce, so his kids were first as he was caring for them because his wife had a lot of addictions. And so we put one another first, but then my children felt like I put my husband first, his kids, and then they were third. And the converse happened with his children. So they felt like they were in third position to him, and my kids were second position. So that's been a huge, huge challenge to go for.
Yes.
There is.
Did everybody get to hear that? The thoughts on how to fix that is a couple things. Okay. First thing that I do is I would go and I would get a jar and I would put things, activities that the kids like to do. How old are the children?
20 and 22 year old are out of the house. 18 year old just left on a mission, so they're 17, 15, 14, 12, and 10.
Okay. So what I'd do is those kids that are at home is I'd go and make a jar and fill it full of things that you can do as a family. You have to understand that the children 17 on up may choose not to go do things with you just because they'd rather go be with friends than be with you. And that's nothing against you or your husband. It's just the facts of life. And so one of those things is now you're doing things. And so what you want to do is you want to be able to pick things out of that jar. What I try to do is even have them put a divider in so that one week we're doing one thing from one family, another from another family, so that you're doing that. Okay, now I'm going to slip, that's one thing, and I'm going to go into the most important thing that I think that you can do. One of the things that we find is that children cannot love other people unless they serve them. Did you guys hear that? A child will not learn to love, and they will not learn to respect unless they serve. The reason that you guys love your children so much, the love you have for your spouses, the love you have for people that you have isn't because it's just easy to love them. You love them because you're doing what? You're taking care of them. You're serving them. A child can't learn to love and respect if they're not serving others. Now, what I would recommend that you do is that you have ways in your home that you take the children and serve others. They can serve one another. We used to have what we called a secret somebody. That's what my wife called it. And every week our children at family home evening, we never had family home evening, we didn't call it that, but it was family home evening every Sunday we had, where they would go and they would draw a family member's name, and they had to go do something good for them every day, and the goal was is not to get caught. If you got caught, then the service counted, but at the end of the week, if you got caught three times, then you never got the prize, which was usually a big candy bar or something. Okay, and my children were really, really good at never getting caught. Until 2 years ago, when we're sitting around talking about it, and my eldest son said, "Dad, don't you realize that we just never told you that we caught them because we wanted the prize at the end of the day, and we just worked it out amongst us?" And I thought, gee, you know, I thought we was doing such a good job. But literally, they were serving each other, and then at the end of the week, they would share with the family what somebody had done for them. So we're doing service, okay? Also, as you go and you take your family and do service for others, it changes the way they think and the way they feel in their hearts. They're learning to be empathetic. They're learning to see what other people go through. So our children, literally, we would sit down in sacrament meeting, and until our youngest, actually, we were still doing it when she was at home and as a senior in high school, we would sit down in sacrament meeting and we'd write out three names. Both me and my wife and all of my children, we'd write out three names on a sticky that my wife would hand out every week in sacrament meeting. And whoever got the most votes on those three names, because they would, we asked them to look around in church on during sacrament meeting and feel an impression that may come of somebody that needed our help. And the top three names, okay, they got the most votes, we would go do something for those three families. Whether it was taking them by cookies or taking brownies or crispy scares or making bread, the older couples, when it was them, we would go over and weed their gardens and weed their flower beds. We were constantly teaching our children to serve. So when they have service, they learn to be empathetic. They learn to think and feel what other people are doing. We would go to the soup kitchens. Okay, we would do the Christmas families. Only we wouldn't go do, you know, pick a name off the tree at Shopko. We would go find a family. We would usually call bishops that had, you know, areas that were poorer, and they were a lot of welfare folks, and we'd go do families for them. That's how we would get our families. But we're teaching the children to serve. So when they're serving the other family members, now what's happening is they're learning to love them. Does that make sense? And so that's where I'd really start directing, is finding ways that the family serves together. And you're serving people who are less fortunate. Okay?
How do you find, for example, I have two children. If I were to remarry somebody without children and have a child with them, do you find that sometimes it becomes an issue of these are my kids, this child is our kid? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And that does happen.
For the two children whose father is.
Well, the hardest part is for the father. The hardest part is they oftentimes treat their one little child. If you have a child with him, they'll treat that child different than your children. Yeah, and then your children will feel that difference.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that says when that goes on, you have to go and probably go into some therapy and work his mind around that. So that's the hard answer and the easy answer. Nope, it's actually easier still, because you don't have as many little bodies in the thing, so it's easier.
So the other person talks.
Okay, because they're not looking for somebody to make them happy.
What if they're finding out someone to help them along the way? I think I started dating a little bit earlier than what most people said I should, and I found comfort in having somebody with me really, who didn't know me and my situation before and during and after, but just me,
mm-hmm.
and where I'm at. And I found that really comforting.
Yeah.
It did last. I wasn't ready, but it was.
And I don't tell people when they should or shouldn't date. I've had people who started dating 6-8 weeks after their spouse passed away. That doesn't bother me. What would worry me is if you step into a relationship or a situation where you want that man to come and rescue you, or that you're actually going and rescuing him, and then you get into a really weird relationship, and I don't encourage those at all. And that's why I like people to go back and as you said, to be happy being alone. Okay? Okay. Going on, really quick, the do's and the don'ts. I'm just going to go through them really quick because we're out of time. Don't let children run the show. Often, especially when divorced parents are overrun with guilt, too much priority is given to the needs of the child. Parents become too afraid to say no, there is no order, or to discipline. They fear loss of love and want to avoid confrontation. Don't, abdicate your responsibility. Show me a family run by children, and I'll show you cowardly parents trying to buy love. Don't be afraid to be the boss. By nature, children test limits to see how much they can get away with. It's instinctive. It isn't just with you, it's all kids. And they don't respect parents who give in. Rules should be clearly stated and enforced. Don't expect to have love feelings for your stepchildren at the outset. Don't expect your stepchildren to show love to you either. Love is something that must be earned. You must give love first, and you will someday be rewarded by having it returned. Don't compare your stepchildren to your own children. This only heightens conflict within the family. It goes back to the little wish list and the expectations. Okay? Do respond with loving behavior regardless of what a child does to you. Consistency is important. Do talk to your children regularly to find out what they're thinking and feeling. Regular family conferences can help to reduce misunderstandings. Very, very important. Star that one, would you please? Do allow all feelings to be expressed and talked about. To suppress feelings is to store up trouble. However, do not allow feelings, especially anger, to be acted out. It is sufficient just to talk to them. That book that I asked you to read from Dr. Gottman helps you talk through that kind of stuff. Do be open to learning from new personalities of your stepchildren. Do spend a lot of time in prayer. Ask God to keep your love fresh and alive for your new spouse, for your children, and for God's gift to you, your stepchildren. See your task of parenting and befriending them as a special calling. Forge a godly family with the same determination you'd use and serve in any mission field. No task is more holy than this. question.
I just think sometimes it's hard because of our eternal marriage and how we have that perspective of then you get married a second time and how does that all work? And I just kind of realized this time because people say, well, you know, you'll just get married the second time for companionship. And I just want to just say, I don't know, I just think it was really important for me to know that I didn't want to get remarried for companionship. It was like I wanted a real marriage with the same kind of love. And that.
Thank you very, very much. We are going to end on that thought, only I'm going to add one little piece to it. The last piece that I'd like to throw at that, because I had a wonderful young sister years ago. She was one of the original six, one of the sows. She taught me a concept because she came into her second marriage understanding that even though she loved her husband, he loved her, their marriage was wonderful, but it wasn't perfect. And what she came into the relationship understanding is that her new marriage, she needed to repent and be a better wife. And she entered into that relationship saying, I need to be a better wife to this man. I see them all the time. They are wonderfully, wonderfully happy. She is married to her first husband in the temple. He is a divorced man. And the reality is they're both very, very happy. And he understands and he has faith that whatever God has in store for him is okay. But both of them are working really, really hard to do what? To make that relationship perfect. Know that God loves you. And thanks, guys.